Okay, well, welcome to St Cross College. If you haven't been here before, to our ethics seminars. And so our first seminar of the term, we have two per term, is Matthew Hussey, who I have a confession to make. One night I was watching an interesting program, very educational, called Undercover Princesses. One of the undercover princesses lacked confidence. And on the program, Matthew Hussey was wheeled in, and he seemed to imbue her with a great deal of confidence. He's also been in a stack of other media engagements and has been described as Britain's leading dating coach. And he's going to give us a talk, obviously, about dating, the differences between men and women, and ethics. So, without further ado, over to you, Matthew.
Okay, thank you very much. So, I don't know how much you already know about me or what my background is, but essentially I built my career around making changes in people, in their confidence, in their ability to present themselves well, in their ability to go out and get what they wanted, whether it be in their love lives, whether it be in their careers, any area. That was what I built my career around. And it was confidence to begin with. But what was interesting was that confidence area. I was the guy who you came to, and in an hour we shifted areas of your confidence. And it brought so many guys to me who had issues with their confidence with women. And so I started to coach tons and tons of guys. And these were all guys who, for whatever reason, had certain insecurities when it came to talking to women or came to interacting with women. Came to socializing, getting sexual, you name it. I had every type of guy in the world who was lacking confidence in that area. And what I found was, when it came to confidence, men's biggest issues were usually rooted in their issues with the opposite sex. Now, the interesting thing was, I did that for about 3 years. And in that time, I coached over 2,000 guys across the world, everywhere from Dubai, Tokyo, America, Australia. I coached them everywhere. After a while, I had women coming to me and saying, "Why aren't you doing the same thing for us?" And the truth was, I was terrified of doing the same thing for women. Absolutely terrified. Because I could stand up, and I was used to it. I was used to getting up in front of 300 guys and just giving it everything. And these were like, you know, mean-looking guys who were sitting there waiting to learn, like, "Fix me, tell me how to do this." And the difference with women was, you could put 5 women in a room with me and I was more scared than 300 guys. And to me, that was actually quite indicative, because I was, you know, the confidence guy. That was what I was being called at the time. And yet, I was kind of nervous when I first thought about doing that. And I had so many women coming to me and saying, "Why don't you do this for women? Why don't you do this for women?" It was usually the girlfriends of the guys that I hooked up. But they were saying, "I've got loads of single friends. Why don't you do something?" So in the end, I put on a seminar, and I did it for about between five and ten women there. And it was just a bit of fun. But I wanted to see how it went down. And what was a tiny part of what I was doing, compared to this huge part I was doing over here with men and corporates and all stuff like that, suddenly exploded. Because all the stuff that I said in that seminar, which I thought was obvious, because I coached men for so long, wasn't obvious. And I found that during that seminar I had jaws hitting the floor, where I was exposing myths that people had been following for a long time, information in books and the biggest books, you know, not small books, like the books that are the best sellers, that when I read I winced for how wrong some of the information was. And people were going crazy, and suddenly, you know, we were everywhere. We had a column in Now magazine, we were doing TV shows, we were going everywhere teaching this stuff. When I got asked to do this talk, I was kind of intimidated. So I thought, this is a different bunch than I'm used to. You know, I'm used to my clients in London. I'm used to, you know, people fly all over the world to do our programs now. 2-day courses that range anywhere from £300 to £3,500. But this was a different audience to me. You know, this was an audience of intellectuals. And not to say that my clients aren't, but, you know, there's a lot of you in one room right now. And I started to think about the title of this talk and what I wanted to share with you today, because it was the differences between men and women and the ethics of dating. Now, I'd never really had to think about the ethics of dating before, And I hadn't really had to bottle the differences between men and women before. Because if you imagine, I have a whole room full of guys and I teach them what I think they need to know. And then I have a whole room full of women and I teach them what I think they need to know. And I never really thought, what are the actual differences here? And so I had to really rack my brain for this talk today to think, what am I going to share? And what I realized was the real differences were so epitomized by the way you had to coach those two groups of people differently. Because it's very, very different. If I got up in front of a room full of women and said the same stuff that I said to a room full of guys, it would fall like a lead balloon. Like I'd get eaten alive. But conversely, if I said the same stuff to the guys I said to the women, it wouldn't resonate. So what I want to talk to you about today is not from a scientific perspective, because you know, I know there's people in this room who understand that far better than me. What I know is how it works on the ground. Because I've coached enough people now, you know, with the women that I've coached now, I've coached over 5,000 people across the world, and I've coached enough people to see the patterns, to see what's actually going on. Not necessarily why all that's happening, but just what's happening right in front of us. And if I get that person to apply that technique, or if I get that person to try that, or say that, or move in this way, how do they get a different result? And so my education, because there's no formal education in this area, you know, there's no exam pass to do what I do. You get education by exposure, you know, and you either learn fast and make changes for people, or people don't come see you again. So I'm going to take you through today what I found. And some of the most obvious differences that when I really thought about it, there were between men and women. So, firstly, if we come right to today and we look at the people in this room, I would argue that generally we have equality right now. We have equality in terms of where we are with each other as genders. We're in roughly the same position. You know, whatever are the nuances right now, I think that we've come a long way and we are at a place now where, you know, we can safely say that 50 years ago things would have been very, very different. And if we go back 50 years or 100 years, we'd have seen people in this room treated completely differently based on their gender. And I think what's really interesting about that is no matter how far we've come, no matter how different we are now as genders today, the old rules still apply. When it comes to love lives, people still do the same things. People are still wired in the way that they were 100 years ago. And so we still follow the same patterns. One of the biggest areas I find this in, one of the areas that completely epitomizes it on every level, is talking to people. I want the guys in here to think about the last time you were attracted to someone. The single guys in here. The last time you were attracted to someone. And for the married guys, you can think back to when you were single. You know, when was the last time that you were attracted to someone? And I want you to ask yourself in that moment, did you approach that person? Did you go up and try and make it happen? Now I'll come back to this in a second. But now I want to ask you, the women in this room, I want you to think back to the last time you were attracted to someone. Could have been anyone. Could have been someone walking past you in the street. Could have been someone that was in the coffee shop when you went to get your coffee. Could have been someone in a lecture you were in. Think back to the last time you were attracted to someone. And ask yourself, did I go up and try and make that happen? Now, the interesting thing isn't that there's this wave of proactivity on one side, and on the other side, there's none. Because what I generally found was both men and women tend to be pretty terrible at talking to each other. As a general rule, we're pretty bad at it. No one taught us, you know, or generally, you know, the people who do well usually have an older brother or an older sister who showed them the ropes early on. But I know that me, I didn't grow up knowing that stuff and I was terrible for a long time. And I'm sure that there are people in this room who are in that same position, because it's not something our parents teach us very well. You know, if you're a guy, your mum encourages you to treat every woman you like as a princess and buy her flowers and do this for her and do that for her. And we've been rejected every time we try and do that. So we know that doesn't work, but that's what our mum said. And for women, they get pretty crummy advice as well when they're young, because obviously they take their advice from their friends, which is usually blind leading the blind. I know women that you've taken some advice from someone at some point in your life. You took advice from someone who's getting results that were worse than you were getting at the time. But you take that advice because we take it from people in our peer group. And I think most of us have bad role models when it comes to this area, and so we never really learn it. So we're both pretty bad at it, unless we either naturally have an ability or we learn it. And both of us tend to be pretty bad at taking action. But what's going on internally is very different. And that's the interesting thing. In a seminar room full of guys, I was thinking about this. I get 200-300 guys in a room. And every single one of those guys wants more than anything in the world to see someone he's attracted to, and in a moment without thinking, just go and make it happen, right there and then. I can go one shot, one kill, I can go and make it happen if I see someone I'm attracted to. That's generally where guys are. It doesn't mean they have bad intentions. It just means that the guy, wants to be able to go and make that happen. He sees it as his role to be able to go up and talk to that person. And if the guy can't do it, he feels, on some level, like he's not being enough of a man. Like, he should be able to do that. Why can't I do that? I see someone I'm attracted to over there. Why can't I go over there? And they see every other guy thinking, every other guy has this but me. And of course they don't. 99% of guys don't walk around waltzing up to every woman they're attracted to. And if women, you're in a bar and you think that's bullshit, you know, I get hit on all the time by complete weirdos, it's the same 1% of weirdos the entire time. It's not guys, all different guys, it's just the same tiny percentage. Most guys aren't doing it. But they want to be able to. We all do. Secretly, we all do. And there are always guys who say, you know what, no, I'm just, you know, I'm already good at this. And you watch them and you see how many times they actually talk to people that they want to talk to. And it's minimal. Or if they talk to them, they know they can't take it further. How do I take this from just being a friend to actually making something happen here? Every guy wants to be able to do that and be proactive. Women aren't the same. When I get a seminar room full of women, they have not come to learn how to approach men. In fact, it's not even on the radar. What do you think some of the most common questions I get asked by women are? When women come to the seminar, what do you think are some of the most common questions that I get asked?
How to deal with men they've already got relationships, basically.
Okay, so how to deal with this guy, right? Yeah. And that's, by the way, that's a classic difference already between a lot of the women and the guys. Because the men come into the room and they're like, I just want to get a woman. Whereas the women come into the room and they're like, I want to get that guy. It's a very classic difference. So yeah, how do I deal with this guy? It might be an ex that... you know, it's gone wrong and they want to get him back. It might be someone they're with that they're trying to, you know, get to do something different. But it's about this guy. What else? What are the questions?
How do I get men to approach me?
Okay, yeah, cool. How to get men to approach me?
And then the flip side of that would be how to approach men.
Okay. Do you think women ever ask that?
No. I know I would.
You're actually very different. Because very special. No, because women never ask me this. Never, 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 ever, ever, ever ask me that question. But it's a good question. What else?
How to retain him for more than one night.
Very good. Yeah. Okay, so let's put that in black and white. I've slept with him. And then it's how to actually make sure that something happens out of this. He doesn't just leave after the first night. Anyone else?
How do I get into marrying?
Yeah, absolutely. Marriage, right? How can I make this guy marry me?
I have to make sure he's not using me to use my friends.
Specific one. So, no, it's good. How to, okay, so not used for friends. Okay. Anyone else?
Better sex.
Again?
Again,
sorry to make you. I know there was sex in there somewhere. Was it better sex?
Better.
Pay attention to my sexual needs.
Okay. How can I get him to pay attention?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, let's put better sex. Okay, cool. There's a big one we're missing out that single women always, always, always ask, and it's usually the first question I get asked.
How to avoid it, he only wants
some
sex.
Maybe, so how to avoid players, but that's still not the first one.
How can I tell if he really likes me?
How can I tell if he really likes me?
What's wrong with me?
That's a big one, by the way. I have a video on YouTube, which is how to tell if a guy is attracted to you. I think it's cool. It's got more hits than any other video. It's ridiculous. So that's a big one, how to tell signs of attraction. Yeah, and I tend to find that this is a really big one for women. Why for women do we think that's a bigger one? Signs of attraction.
Because men's egos usually mean that they're not that bothered. About
whether someone is attracted.
Yeah, if a guy fancies a woman, a lot of it, as you pointed out earlier, a lot of them practice won't, but in some situations, you know, he'll just try and get her regardless.
Ah, okay.
Well,
that's a very specific type of guy. That's a small percentage of guys.
Okay.
I mean, most guys are crushed when they fancy someone and they don't get any reciprocity. But why might the signs be a bigger thing for women?
How to get him to communicate with me.
How to get him to communicate with me. Is that a new question or...?
I think that's a new piece that encompasses some of this.
Okay, how to get him to pay attention, did you say?
No, how to communicate.
Communicate. Okay, that's an interesting one. It actually ties in with the point I was just making. Why is the science a big issue for women?
Because you want to be something.
Because...
You don't want to risk.
Yeah, there's an element of that. I don't want to take a risk, so I need to be absolutely certain that he is dying for me before I even try. How about to do with the way we're made up as men and women?
Men are less communicative.
Okay. And I would argue that men are far less able, and this is not something I know scientifically, it's just what I see. Men are far less able to pick up or read things generally than women are. Or rather, women pay much more attention to the small details than men do. The clip that I was going to show you actually illustrated that, because what it shows is on Friends, one of the girls being kissed by one of the guys, and she comes back and she is crazy about it, and she gets all the friends together and she analyzes every part of the kiss, and it's like, where were his hands, and how slow was it, what happened next, how intense was it, where were you at the time, what did he say, what did he do, and it's all this detail that they're after. And then it flashes to the boys and he goes, so then I kissed them, and the other guy goes, you use tongues, and he goes, yeah. He goes, cool. And that was it. And for me it was so true, because there are so many little details that are analysed by women. I mean, you should see the emails that I get from women compared to the emails I get from men. The emails I get from men are, you know, I was trying to get laid and this thing didn't happen, and how do I change that for next time? With the women, that will be a 2,000 word essay. And I'll know everything. I'll know what he was wearing, I'll know what scent he was wearing, I'll know where it's from, I know what his dog's called, I know everything. because there are details that women analyse that I find men don't. And by the way, I'm generalising here, okay? Because there are always men who don't conform and women who don't conform. But these are the things I'm seeing. So signs of attraction is such a big one. Men never really ask me that. Men, they don't really ask me that. They focus on what they do, on what they can do to get someone attracted. But they don't focus on the signs of if someone else is attractive. There's still the biggest question. The one that I get asked again and again and again and again and again.
That's what I wonder. What is the guy hiding?
What's he hiding?
Where?
Right, absolutely. Where is this magical, wondrous fountain of guys that I can just choose from like it's a buffet? Because I can't find guys right now. That's the thing that I get all the time, is I'm just not meeting guys, or I'm not meeting decent guys, I'm not meeting available guys, I'm not meeting straight guys. It's all of these things. I'm just not meeting guys. That's the one thing I get asked again and again and again. I have never been asked that question by men. Ever. Men don't generally ask that question. I mean, men will get more specific about it. Like, where do I find a woman who's like this? But they're not really finding it a problem to meet women. Whereas women find it a much bigger thing to meet guys. And I think part of the problem there lies in proactivity. Because if we imagine, as guys, we've always grown up thinking it's our job to go and talk to you. It's our job to go and say something. And that doesn't mean we're very good at it. That doesn't mean we ever do it necessarily. But we do think it's our job. As I said, not necessarily the same for women. Women don't necessarily, most women don't see it as their job, because most women have been conditioned to believe that at some point in their life it's going to happen to them. That someone will come up to them. Prince Charming will come along and it will happen. And so what I think happens, and what I see with so many women, is I'll say to them, firstly, think of when you see people that you're attracted to. Think of how often it happens. Now, forget whether a guy is single, forget whatever specific things you look for. I'm sure that everyone in this room sees people they're attracted to. If not every day, then at least every week. You see people that you think, I'm curious about that person. You might not think, I love that person, but you might think, I'm curious enough that I'd want to talk to that person. For the women in here, I want you to ask yourself, and the guys can do this too, reverse it, but for the women, how many guys do you meet a week? How many guys do you meet a week? If you've got something, write down or think of a number.
You guys or the guys you already know?
Right. See, this is the key. Because last time I did this, there was a woman who was claiming, I never meet guys. You know, I never meet the right guys. I always want this type of guy. I never meet him. I'm just so fussy. I'm just so picky, which is always, by the way, the excuse people use. I'm fussy. I'm just so fussy, you know. I'm so picky. That's why I never... Bullshit. It's the biggest load of nonsense I ever heard. Because it's another way of saying, well, if I'm fussy, then I can avoid everything. I never have to try with anyone because I'm too fussy. And guys do this too when they don't want to approach a woman. They'll sit next to a woman, and they'll sit down at a restaurant, and the funny thing about guys is they often suddenly get scared when they see a woman they're attracted to. Because immediately they know that now they're going to feel guilty for not going over there. So now they're annoyed. Because they saw a woman they were attracted to, they know they're not going over there, but now they're pissed off at themselves that they're not going over there. So they sit there and they just mull this thing over. And she's sitting there, and what will happen is he'll go, what can I say? If I did that, yeah. No, because then she's going to say that. God knows the people close to her, they're going to hear what I'm saying and they're going to laugh. And then the waiter brings up a salad for her. And he goes, fucking vegetarian. She's a vegetarian. I hate vegetarians. I bet she drives a green car as well, like an electric car. You know, she sponsors monkeys at the zoo. Not a vegetarian. Like I give a shit about vegetarians. Screw this. No way. Glad she saved me the time. And now he can carry on guilt-free eating his meal because he has a reason that he doesn't have to go over there. And we all do this. We find reasons. You know, we find someone we're attracted to, and then we go, oh, no, they did that. They just did, and they're not my type. I'm sorry, and now we don't have to do it. And it's the same on both sides. But what's really interesting is that with women, with this woman, she said, I never meet guys that I'm attracted to. I'm just really, really fussy. And I said, how many guys do you meet a week? She said, well, 10. I said, so you meet 10 new guys a week. That's actually not bad for someone who says that she's not meeting any guys that she likes. Significant amount of guys a month you're meeting. And she said, yeah, well, it is. I said, so you're meeting 10 new guys a week? She said, new guys? I said, yeah, new guys. She said, so it doesn't include, like, family members? No. It doesn't include people that I go to the bar with every Friday? No. It doesn't include people I'm always with at work? No. It doesn't include people who are already there. I want you to think about how many new guys you meet a week. New guys. And there usually is the problem. And that's for men and women both. Right? For men, we don't meet that many new women a week. But it's not because we're not going to the right places. Very rarely is it because we're not going to the right places. It's more often than not because we don't capitalize on opportunities when they're there. So, man or woman will walk into a coffee shop and we won't be able to go and talk to that person we want to talk to. Now, as I said, men want to but can't. Women don't even want to. Well, he should come up to me. And I think, this is a guess from me, but I would assume that over time, the reason women have had to dress in a way that attracts, whereas men have become, before were less focused on fashion, is because women are trying to elicit an approach. Whereas men aren't. Men, it's very much in their power to go and do that. Whereas for most women, they're trying to elicit something. They're trying to elicit attention so that they won't have to go up. Now, the funny thing is, we see a lot of roles reversed nowadays. Men have become or have been made very insecure about their looks and their bodies and fashion, and so men start taking notes of everything. And women are becoming slightly more proactive, but not very. But not very. So, what do you do? If you're in this position, and if you're a guy, and you want to go and make it happen, what do? Well, for guys it's easy because they see it as their role, therefore if they can get up the confidence and learn the skills to do it, then they can go and do it. But what about women? Can you just get more proactive, do you think? Is it possible? Would a guy, and obviously you can, but what do you think would be the response to you getting more proactive? What do you think the guy response would be, given the conditioning that I've explained between, or the differences in conditioning of men and women?
Be relieved.
Maybe he'll be relieved.
Maybe a bit threatened.
What? Yeah, maybe he's a bit threatened. Anyone else?
Scared.
Maybe impressed.
Maybe impressed. Any other guys have got any responses? How would you feel if a woman came up to you?
Delighted.
Me too. So delighted. Now the interesting thing is, a very female response is to assume that a guy might be intimidated or scared or kind of freaked out by it. And the reason is, that's judging it from a female mindset. A female mindset is often, if a guy comes up to me out of nowhere, I don't even know this guy, what's his agenda, what does he want, is he a normal guy? All this stuff suddenly goes through your head before you think, can I just talk to this guy? For a guy, he hasn't got any of that conditioning. Because women obviously have grown up being used to a level of attention from guys, being used to the concept of being approached, and therefore become slightly hardened to it. So as a guy, your job becomes more difficult because you're not going up to a fresh slate. You're going up to someone who has been preconditioned by every asshole who has come up to her ever in her life. And she's judging you based on all of those guys before. But as a woman coming up to a guy is a very new thing to us. It doesn't matter who the person is, it doesn't matter how attracted I am to that person, I'm not going to just smack down a woman who comes to me out of nowhere. Whereas women will do that regularly to guys. You will be terrible. And I see it, because I used to take guys out. I used to actually go out with guys and watch the responses that these women would give them, and they were horrific. Like, it's no wonder that guys approach once and then say never again. Because it gets really bad. Now, the funny thing is, the more confident you try to be as a guy, the more you try and grow and develop yourself, the harder you get shot down if you do it wrong. If you get it right, the payoff is bigger. If you get it wrong and you're trying to be really confident and secure, that's where someone really shoots you down. When I used to coach guys regularly and I used to take them out. I do this for women now, but not so much for guys. I used to take out like 20 guys at a time. We used to have this course on a Friday night, which was called the AA course, the Approach Anxiety course. And it was all to get guys over that fear of going up and just talking to someone. And I had 20 guys with me this one night. And imagine this, 20 guys, all out, all looking to try and talk to people and just break out their shells and do stuff that's outside their social norm. And it's just a way of conditioning people differently. You know, you don't develop someone's confidence just by sitting in a room with them. You get them out there. So we got out there with these guys, and there was this one guy who just cared so much what people thought. Like, you can't believe, like, just was so terrible. He couldn't even ask someone the time because he was afraid he might be bothering them. You know, and he was so, so deathly afraid. And I was saying to him, look, you've got to stop. You've got to stop taking these people so seriously that you talk to. You've got to stop taking yourself so seriously. And he goes, well, you do it then. Which is always the place people go when you're trying to help them and tell them something. The first place they go is anger. Because you're the guy trying to tell them. So he said, well, you do it then. And I said, well, look, I'm going to show you an exercise just so that you know that I don't take things too seriously and I'm prepared to kind of joke about a little bit. And I walked up, we had two women standing at a table, and I decided, you know what, I'm just going to be as shy as I can possibly be. I'll be shy beyond belief. And so there's two women standing at a table, and bearing in mind, these 20 guys, if they see me do anything, because in their mind they think I've got to get it right 100% of the time, they're always watching like a hawk, everything that I do. Did he just brush against that person's shoulder? They're thinking about everything, overanalyzing everything on this evening. And I walked up and I put it in every part of my body language. I walked up to these two and is it okay if I just, I was just thinking I could come up and talk to you too, if that's okay. And one of the girls went, yeah, okay, sure. Notice when you're that bad, they don't shoot you down anymore, they just take pity on you. And I said, thanks, it's just, my mum said I could go out tonight and just thought, you know, it'd be good to come and talk to some people. And he said, yeah, okay. And I said, I let like a huge awkward silence pass. And I said, I know this is, like, seems a little strange out of nowhere and stuff. Will one of you be my girlfriend? Please. And one of them at that point went, and she decided she was going to kind of play with me a little bit. And she went, well, which one of us do you want? And I, thinking, I've got to prove to this guy that this is going badly, because I've got to show him that this isn't as serious as he thinks it is. I go, I'll take anything. And then And then this one woman grabbed my hand. She clasped my hand in hers and went, "You must never say that to a woman." Meanwhile, 20 guys who can't hear what I'm saying see that after a couple of minutes, this girl's already holding my hand and they go, "Shit, he's good." My other guy comes up out of nowhere. He decides he's going to come and wing me in this scenario. I'm like, "Don't come over. I want to get out. Like, don't come over." And he comes over, and he's all cool, by the way, because I spent the last 2 hours working on his body language with him and the way it came across. So he comes over, and he's looking good. And he goes, "Hi, you know my friend?" And she, "Oh, you're his friend." She goes, "Listen, you must help him." But the truth is, we take it so, so seriously. But when I take women out to this same scenario, the funny thing is, the epiphany moments that they have are above and beyond what the guys ever have. And the reason is, it's so far outside of their reality that they could go and choose the guy that they want to be with and go and make it happen with him, that they suddenly feel liberated beyond anything else. They feel like, we have 2-day workshops that we do, and I had a woman come in on a Sunday from going out Saturday night, and she was emotional because she said, "I can't believe that I can just go and do this. Like, all the time I've been waiting around for people to come up to me, for someone to come up to me, for it to happen. I know I can go and select people, but how do you do that?" Because what we've said is that it's a strange thing. It's a strange thing. Not that it's intimidating or scary, but for guys, it can be a strange thing for a woman to come up to them because they're trying to work out what's going on. Most guys, in fact, when a woman comes up to them out of nowhere, think that she might be a PR woman or someone who's trying to sell them something. Because the only time we're used to women coming up to us out of nowhere is when we're outside a club and they're trying to drag us into the next club. We're not necessarily used to people coming up to us. So how do you make it happen, let's say, as a woman, without breaking conditioning that's been around for hundreds of years? How do you do that? Because there's 3 options, aren't there? There's either bow to conditioning, there's break through your own conditioning, i.e. act differently, or there's change society. Right? Now this one ain't worth your time. This one is okay, but you're still kind of fighting the current a little bit. So what's the way? How do you get results? How do you make something happen when you don't want to do this one? You don't want to do this one necessarily, or at least in an obvious way, and you don't want to do this one. I took what was an olden day approach of the white handkerchief, the classic woman with the white handkerchief, which was what? A woman would walk by, she might see a guy she liked, and she'd drop the handkerchief in front of the guy she liked, and then she'd keep walking. The guy sees the handkerchief and goes, "It's quite an opportunity." Takes the handkerchief, walks it back to her, starts the conversation. Now the guy thinks he's making the first move. He thinks it was his idea. Whereas she pulled the strings from the very beginning because she selected him. And that to me is the biggest, if you want to talk about differences in power between men and women in dating these days, it's that most women wait to be selected, whereas guys, at least, even if they're not proactive enough to go and do it, they at least have the power to go and select the person that they want. Now, of course, they also have, the woman has the power to reject him, right? But he has the power to go up to whoever he wants. Women don't usually perceive that as their power. They're lucky if a guy that they like comes up to them. But usually women aren't in the habit of treating it like a bit of a buffet, like, who do I want? You know, like, I could go up and make it happen with anyone, because they wait for something to happen. What I like to do is reverse that. not take away men's power, but actually say, you know what, both people have even power if they know what they're doing. Because any woman can follow that same white handkerchief approach to select the guy that she wants, but without breaking through conditioning. And that's the problem is, most women, when they shop, they don't shop like they date. When they shop, they go out, they look for a dress, and they pick the one they want. And if that one doesn't fit, they throw that away, they try this one. If that doesn't work, they try this one. They choose the one they want. They don't wait for the right dress to come to them. And that's how most women act in their love lives. You know, when I coach a room full of women, that's how most people act. So how do you do it? Well, the truth is, us guys, we have this horrible thing that every time we go out and see someone we like, we pretty much know it's going to be up to us to make something happen. And the problem is, because we're not that great at reading signs, we don't often see if you're trying to tell us you like us, please come over to me. I have women who do this. They'll be in a group of their girls having a good time, and they see someone they're attracted to. And it will look something like this. They'll be talking to their girlfriends, having a good time. And can I even just borrow two people? It doesn't matter, just two females. I'm not going to make you do anything, don't mind. Just to stand here and be the friends.
A dream.
I promise I won't hurt anyone.
Okay.
All right. Fantastic. Okay. So, let's imagine your name is?
Ali.
Ali. Hi, I'm Matthew.
Olivia.
Hi, Olivia. So I'm with Ali and Olivia, and we're having a good time. We're out, and, you know, I see someone that I like over here. I'm a girl, I'm not a guy. And I see someone I like over here. Now, most women do this. They're talking with their friends. They look over, they see the guy, they go, okay, he knows. And, of course, the guy doesn't know. He thought you were looking for the toilet, looking for friends that are over there. He doesn't make any assumption that you like him in that moment. So, as a woman and as a guy, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us some sort of confirmation that you were actually looking at us. And that confirmation can just take the form of a second look. But the problem is, most people aren't confident enough to hold a look for slightly longer. Because they see someone and then they look back and they're like, okay, if he doesn't come over now, screw it. At that point, if you look, he's like, it's like you've just thrown a ping pong ball at his head, but he's not quite sure it came from you. At this point, he needs a confirmation. So you can look, be having fun. By the way, have fun with your friends. The last thing you want to do is be like lighthouses. Have fun with your friends. But when you look the second time, it's like you're giving confirmation. And it's as fast as this. It's like, look, have fun with your friends. You look again, and now you're back with your friends. But the second look is the one where he goes, oh, maybe. Maybe she likes me. And it taught him something. And whatever is in your character, and guys, you can do this as well, because it works just as well. But for women, it's more potent, because it is about actually bringing the guy over and giving him that confirmation. In that second look, something about you, something about your personality should come across. But of course, what percentage of guys do you think will come over at that point, even having that confirmation? Even if they assume, I think she likes me. What percentage?
10%.
1%. 10%, maybe, on a good day. Like, most guys still won't have the confidence to come over. Why? Because if he's over here, he's got to come from over here, see you there, walk over, think what he's got to say on the way over. Okay, so I'm going to say this, and then they go, hi. And then you reject him, and he's got to do the walk of shame back to where he came from. It is a terrifying notion. So don't blame it on guys if they don't come over at that point. Because what has to happen is you have to give them a second chance. So this is plan B. All right, you've given them some sort of confirmation. Plan B is get proximity. So actually, get close to the guy. Why? Because it's much easier if we're here and I'm just standing here ordering a drink, doing whatever I'm doing, for me to turn over and say, hey, how's it going? Than it is for me to walk across the room and say, hey, how's it going? If I like you, I'm 50% more likely at least to say something from here than I am from over there. So find an excuse. Find an excuse to get close. It might be the bar's next to him. It might be you need to throw something away and the bin is next to him. Just find an excuse to be there. And when you get close, the interesting thing about dynamics between people is if I, let's say I stand here and I'm trying to get closer because we're trying to have a conversation. Everyone has a bubble, right? A bubble that they're comfortable with. Now, if I come here, it's okay. If I come here, that's where it kind of gets uncomfortable, right?
Yeah. Personal safety.
Yeah. But if I get you to just turn this way, if you face right that way, and I stand here, we're still okay.
Yeah.
And even, I can say, you know, look at George Bush over there. And I've actually managed to get an arm around her there without her feeling uncomfortable. We can get really close here, whereas if you think face on trying to get that close, yeah, it's really intense. Even trying to get that close is really intense, but we can get that close shoulder to shoulder. Third part of the plan, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much. Third part of the plan, after proximity, is what if he doesn't come over at that point? What if a guy doesn't do something at that point? Which guys we know that there's still a chance we won't, right? Because we'll have that person next to us and we'll still be trying to think of what to say. So we're still trying to go, okay, what would be the best line in the world? And of course we can't think of it. We rarely think to say, hey, how's it going? You know? We're trying to think of the perfect thing to say. And of course there is no such thing. So, what do you do at that point if it still doesn't happen? How do you play to the right dynamics that we've talked about before and the differences between the senses? What would be your plan C?
Make sure you don't have a drink.
Make sure...
you don't have a drink.
Okay, so maybe he has an excuse to say something, do something. What else?
Can't you just say hello yourself?
Right. So the third step is initiate verbally, but there's a special way you do this because you don't want to go over there and just communicate a ton of sexual attraction. What you'd like to do is just give him the opportunity to talk to you if that's what he wants to do, right? Because, of course, the best strategies are the ones that eliminate all risk. Especially as a woman, the best strategy is the one that allows you to create every opportunity for him to do something if he's interested, but don't put you on the line in any real way. Because notice how we're still playing to social... We're still allowing conditioning to take its place.
Smile's always good.
Smile. Now, if you smile at the same time as you initiate verbally, that's a great thing. But one of the best things you can do is when you initiate verbally, firstly, don't do it in a really sexual way. Just do it in a very neutral way, like you're asking a question. Favours are the best. Asking the guy a favour, I mean, they did research into favours and found that, you know, they're expecting to find if I do you a favour, you'll like me more. What they found out was if I do you a favour, I like you more. Now this works even stronger when it's men doing it for women. Why? Because it plays to what role for men? What role do men think they have?
The competent provider.
Right. Provider, protector. Women don't have that, although career women go and create that role for themselves. Women don't grow up with that role. It's not something that's inbuilt. Whereas men have that provider, protector role. And anything that you do that triggers that role for him makes him attracted to you. Why? Because it makes him feel more like a
man.
And men are attracted to women who make them feel like a guy. That's how insecure we are. But it's true. Anytime, when a guy offers a woman his jacket and she doesn't take it, it hurts. I was trying to be a guy right there. You know, it's like denying a guy the ability to actually be a man. And so, when as a woman you ask a guy a favour, and it could be something so obvious, it could be directions somewhere, it doesn't matter, it could be the time. He feels like, for 5 seconds, he gets to be the knight in shining armour. If you're in a bar and you ask a guy, can you just hold my jacket for 1 second while I grab his drink to my friends? No guy is going to go, no! Right? He's going to go, of course, he'll hold your jacket. And now, once you've given your drinks to your friends and you come back to him, how much easier is it from here to go, thank you so much, how's your night going anyway? And you haven't risked anything because you're starting from 60 miles an hour. You're not starting from zero. But it started with a favour and his attraction already goes up because he's done a favour for you. So this stuff makes a huge difference. What about later on? What about later on in an interaction? What do we think, let's take, how are we doing for time? How are we doing for time?
Well, we're watching things.
the schedule is we've got another half hour to have discussion and have.
I tell you what, shall I go
college wine? But we could drop one of those things. People are willing to forego wine for wisdom. Sounds like they are.
Okay, let's go for another 10-15
yeah,
minutes.
Okay.
And we'll do some questions. Maybe we can just do the wine with the questions. Why don't we do that?
I think that's not a bad idea. So
I'll keep talking while you.
All right. So, but I think this is going to be a little bit tricky. I will pour some wines, but if people who want a wine could come and get it, that might make things a bit easier. But keep talking.
Okay.
Are you happy to field your own questions? Yeah. Okay.
I think I'll be all right.
You would be.
Let's go further. Let's go far. I mean, this is a challenge for me because my usual seminar is 10 hours. So I'm trying to squeeze this right down for you right now. Let's go way forward in an interaction to the point of, let's say, a relationship. One thing I find really interesting is the dynamics in a relationship and the rules people have about what's right and wrong, about what's acceptable and what's not. Let's take a common scenario. You see your partner flirting with someone else, and it gets your back up. And in that moment, what you realise is that his rules might be different to yours, or her rules might be different to yours. Because every individual has their own set of rules. Imagine it like this, okay? This person has their rules, this person has their rules. How well people do in a relationship will be determined by how much their rules overlap. Because if two people have very different rules for their relationship, it doesn't work. Boy and a girl get together. They spend all night together. Then at 1 o'clock in the morning, when he or she goes, the guy doesn't text the girl. And the girl's pissed off because for her, in order to feel loved in that moment, she needed a text to say goodnight. She needed a text saying, I had a great time, goodnight. His rule is, we just saw each other for 5 hours. What is the point in sending a text? I don't get it. So she gets angry now and says, why didn't you text me? He doesn't understand what he did wrong, and you've now got conflict. Not conflict because one person loves the other one more than that person. Conflict because they have different rules. People have all sorts of different rules in a relationship. Some people's rules are, I need to have sex 3 times a day. Other people's rules are, I need to have sex once a week. And you know that if those two people are in a relationship, there's going to be conflict. Some people's rules are that I need you to call me every day in order for me to feel loved. Another person doesn't need to speak to them every day. What about rules on jealousy? Your partner is flirting with someone else. How do you... Well, is it right for you to enforce your rules on them about you thinking they're flirting too much? Or is it right for them to think that you should be okay with them flirting at that amount? What do we think? Who's right? Who's wrong?
Well, it's not, I mean, the list is stating the obvious. It's not necessarily a question of right or wrong.
Okay.
I mean, the flirting example, ideally, you'd want to be sensitive to what your partner feels, even if you think they're being a bit, you know, unnecessarily you know, jealous or whatever. But having said that, of course, there comes a point, you know, which is, I'm sure I don't need to tell you, you do get some people who are just so obsessively, you know, where if the guy or the girl, you know, the partner, even looks at another person, it's like paranoia.
Is that wrong?
Well, I would say so. I would say that there comes a point when it's so extreme, if you like.
What if they love that person so much that it's just that they want it to be really sacred, and them being around other people and looking at each other in that way actually takes away the innocence of that relationship?
It's unhealthy, I'd argue.
Is it unhealthy if the other person was like that as well? Is it unhealthy if the other person plays by those rules, though?
That's a good point. Well, I still say it's unhealthy, but it wouldn't cause conflict.
No.
So in that sense, if both people had a very similar rule on that, of that example, then I guess it would work.
Mm-hmm.
I would still view it as unhealthy, but...
Maybe, but then a Christian might view it as unhealthy that you've had three sexual partners before you're with them.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, very murky.
I mean, I think it comes down to exactly the Venn diagram you drew. If there's an overlap, no matter how stupid the rules are that people might have, if they match,
right,
it works. If they don't match, I guess the decision is only, do you think you can and want to change your partner? Do you think you can or want to change yourself?
So,
or could you find some kind of middle ground that works? And if none of those options are open to you, it's not going to work out.
Do you think in that position it's right to enforce your rules or to accept theirs?
Compromise.
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 Say what your rules are.
Mm-hmm. So how do you react to that situation? Women, if your guy was flirting over there and then he comes back, how do you deal with that there and then? What do you do?
It wasn't serious,
you know what I'm saying? Okay, so let's just write down a couple of these reactions. Alright, so we've got ignore. What else could you do?
Well, he goes there and you have a horrid look to the other woman so that she's scared and
run
away.
So scare the other woman. Scare her. Yeah.
Joke about
it. Yeah. Alright, so make light of it. Guys, you can answer as well as if it was your girlfriend doing it. Make light of it. What else?
Be honest, say how she feels.
Okay, so be honest.
Some people might get angry.
Yeah.
Get angry. So yeah, honest. Honest can be angry, right? Honest can also be upset.
Can't honest also be totally okay with it?
Honest might be okay with it, but of course we're assuming that these people have rules that conflict.
Rules that conflict.
Okay. Any other? Start. Okay. So flirt with someone. Flirt with someone else.
I start to flirt with a woman. You just pretend, you know. You
flirt with a woman. He's going to think it's his birthday. Okay. Anything.
Don't speak to him for the rest of the evening.
Okay, so ignore him for the rest of the evening.
Don't just scare him.
Huh?
If we have scare her, like scare the competition.
Scare him.
Would be scare him.
Scare him. Thank you, yeah. If I just, I'll
just try to do everything to distract him from her and just be the most attractive one.
Okay, so distraction strategies. Do any of these, are any of these going
to
work?
No.
No.
Yeah.
No. Let's say the result you want is that person not flirting again.
Yeah.
Well, scaring him massively might.
Scaring him?
We all see that it does work that people really intimidate their partner into particular behaviors. I'm not saying it's a good solution.
But that's of course what our mothers did when they didn't want us to do something, right?
Yeah.
And as soon as our mother wasn't around, we did that thing.
Explain what you think the intentions behind their behavior are to the other person. So when I talk to that person, it looks like you can have a feeling, this is a normal interaction, my intentions, when they believe it.
Okay.
Try and explain
so that the other person could do that. What if the person who's not flirting wants the result that the person sees that what they did isn't great and that they don't want them, they're not going to flirt again. What's the most likely to work of these?
All right,
let's just work down. Okay, ignore the situation. What does that do?
Nothing
really. In fact, it can do worse than that because if the guy kind of thinks he was flirting or if the woman thinks she was flirting, now, the fact that you didn't get pissed off in any way says that, wait, this person's got different rules to me because even I thought that what I was doing wasn't that. So what's this person doing when they're not with me? So that can confuse. What about scare her? What does it do?
It works sometimes.
Maybe it works, but what does it do for him?
No,
remember, we've got to think about what we do for the psychology of the person.
But he doesn't have to realize you're doing that. It's something between you and the other woman.
Right. Right. Okay. But it doesn't help you when you're not around, right?
He must be around.
Okay. You've got to be around all the time. All right. So I'm going to cross that one off. Okay. Make light of it. Does that work? What do we think? Make light of it. The benefits are what?
You listed, you've mentioned it.
You've mentioned it, you don't look like you're taking it too seriously, but part of the downside is that you don't look like you take it very seriously. So, of course, it's not that big a deal, so we'll scrap that one. Flirt with someone else, of course, that just creates a game that you'll be playing for the rest of your life, so I'm going to cross that one off. Ignore him. Silent treatment shows him something's wrong, but at the same time, just it kind of doesn't send a clear message. It's just like, you know, he knows that at some point you're going to come round and it's going to be okay, because you can't be like that forever. So we'll ignore that one. Scare him, as we said. Guys, if you're not around and you scare him, then he won't mind. Men are used to nagging from their mums, right? So any form of nagging or anything like that doesn't work. It just means he'll stop there and then. Getting angry and upset. So we've left with being honest. Now, getting angry and upset isn't necessarily the best strategy. In fact, getting emotional in any way isn't necessarily the best strategy. Why? What happens when you either get angry or upset in that moment?
The other person feels bad about himself.
Feels bad?
Or gets defensive.
Alright, so he feels bad about himself. And let's say himself, herself, because it works both ways. Or do they? Think about it on a deeper level than that. On a deeper level than that guilt that someone might feel when they've hurt someone that they care about. What happens on a deeper level than that? What did you just show them in that moment?
You
just showed them some love. What you did was you took a situation that you didn't want to happen and you showed them love for doing it. Does everyone see what I'm saying here? Because anytime you give someone attention in that way, it's a form of validation. Most people show how much they care about someone when stuff goes wrong. Because as soon as someone, let's say someone threatens to break up with them, and they go crazy, you know, I love you so much, blah, 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 blah. And of course in that moment, that person links up. If I want to feel loved, a really quick way to do it is to threaten to break up with this person. If I want to feel loved, a really quick way to get that validation is to make this person jealous for a minute.
Sorry, please. I'm sure that happens, but I would have thought any half-decent relationship, and I'm really talking about, you know, if my girlfriend in that situation came up to me and we'd been at a party or something and she said to, you know, look, Johnny, you might think this is silly, but I felt really hurt when you were flirting with that woman. I mean,
if she said it in that way, she'd be doing the right thing.
Oh, right, okay. So it's just that she gets overly emotional about it, you're saying?
Someone needs to be pretty strong in that moment.
Okay.
It needs to be quite firm. And there's language you can use that really works. You know, because if you say to someone in that moment, look, what you're doing over there, it's not okay with me, it's hurtful, and to tell you the truth, and this is the key word, it's a turn-off. You use that language, someone doesn't want to do that shit again. Because what happens when you say, I'm so angry with you, how could you do that? It's like, love, 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 love. And the guy feels loved, or the person feels loved in that moment. And they feel more attractive, because suddenly it's like there's two people tussling. Right? But if your reaction is, you doing that is a complete turn off, what person wants to turn their partner off? No one wants to be that person. And the truth is, when someone flirts with someone else, it is a turn off. It's not like you're lying. It's a turn off for you. So it's not like you're lying, but it's language that appeals, especially to men, of course. Because the way we feel more like men is we turn you on. That's how we feel like a guy, is that we know we're turning you on. And if we feel like we're not in a moment, then of course it hits us where it hurts. Upset is the next best strategy, of course, because he doesn't want to genuinely upset you. Pissed off is the worst strategy, because it's kind of sexy. So, big differences. And this is the thing about, I think we're absolutely right. I used to think there was right and wrong in relationships. And I like to think that through the amount of people that I've seen, I've kind of grown ahead of what I would have normally and come to a point where I don't think there is necessarily right and wrong in a relationship. I think the only time there's wrong is where someone gives someone the impression that their rules are this and it's not what their rules are at all. I think if two people are honest with each other about what their rules are, then there's no right and wrong. It's just, are these people a good match? The truth is, in most relationships, if we're honest with ourselves, we can see in the first week if someone hasn't got our rules. Think of a relationship you've had that went wrong. And for most of them, the stuff that went wrong a year and a half in or 2 years in is stuff you could have picked out in week one. Conditioning is everything where we want each other's rules to change. And that's another part that is very interesting ethically, something I don't have time to go into, but of course, when we're talking about telling someone that their behaviour is a turn-off, you're conditioning that person. You're conditioning them into a different form of behaviour by appealing to punishment-reward systems. And ethically, that might be seen as wrong because you're changing someone's rules. I mean, the quickest way to get someone to behave the way you want them to behave is just give them the identity you want them to have. It's so easy. I had someone do this to me. What happened? Someone said to me, I just love how kind you are. I love how kind you are. And they said it once, and obviously anytime someone says anything nice about us, it's like, oh, it's nice. And that person then said it a second time, like the next time we met. They said, you're just such a kind person. And now, even if I don't necessarily associate with being a kind person, I'm getting all this validation for it. And I go, anytime I'm around this person, I want to be a kind person. Because this is what this person loves me for. If you go on a random night out with a group of people you don't know, and at the end of the night, what's your name?
Paul.
At the end of the night, Paul's gone out with this random bunch of people, and they go, Paul is so funny. And Paul has he's not funny. But for some reason, he tickled these people on this night. And they go, Paul's the fun, you've got to go out with Paul. He's the funniest guy you'll ever, next time, we're all going out with Paul. Because he's just so funny. Paul says, fuck, I better be funny next time. Because that's what they like me for. Conditioning is everything in human relations. And I'll leave you with a quick story that, before we do a couple of questions, that someone, a good friend of mine, told me. This guy was a complete neat freak. He's the tidiest guy you'll ever meet. He's actually a workman, he's a carpenter. But everything in his life is so, so organised. And I said to him, because I'm always interested in the patterns, what makes someone the way they are? And I said to him, have you always been like this? Have you always been this tidy? And he said, when I was a teenager, I was a pig. This guy's about 35 now. He said, when I was a teenager, I was a complete pig. He said, if you came into my room, I had those stuff everywhere. He said, there were cups on the floor, stains everywhere, the windows were disgusting, I had drawers everywhere. He said, it was gross. You would have literally walked in and gone, this is disgusting. He said, one day, I had a girl coming over. He said, it was the first time I'd really had that experience, and she was coming over that night. And he said, so I decided, you know what, I better make it look half respectable. He said, I only planned on spending 5 minutes on it. He said, but I started to pick up some socks and some pants and some t-shirts, and he said, suddenly there was this little island of space that I could walk around in, and it felt really good. You know when you tidy something, after not tidying it for a while, it feels kind of good, and you get momentum. And he said, I've got this crazy momentum. And he said, I started to tidy everything and it felt good. And I was getting this kind of rush as I was doing it because I hadn't seen it like this since forever. And he said, by the time I finished, I'd spent 3 hours on this thing. He said, it looked amazing. He said, it never looked like that in my life. Afterwards, I went out. I thought, I'll get some drinks. I'll get some food and stuff that I can bring back. We can have it tonight. So he said, I left for 20 minutes. I came back 20 minutes later. I went up to my room and he said, a strange thing, my door was open. He said, my door was never open. Like my parents and that, they knew I loved my door closed, it was always closed. He said, it was open, it was the strangest thing. And what you could see was this path of destruction leading into the room. And he walked in and he saw this room and he said it was 10 times worse than when you left. He said there was stuff everywhere. He said it wasn't just that stuff was on the floor. He said it was like coffee cups had been poured onto the floor. He said there were drawers thrown out. He said the bed was upside down. He said the cupboards were open. He said it was worse than before. He said, I couldn't believe it. He said, I panicked. I ran downstairs. Boom, 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 boom. I got to the kitchen. I said, Mum, look, has someone been here? Has someone walked into my room? Tell me what's happened. Have they taken anything? What's been happening? Have we been robbed? And she said, he said, she looked me dead in the eye in that moment, paused and said, now you know how it feels. That's harsh, right? But the interesting thing was, ever since, his behaviour has completely changed. Because in that moment, he felt the pain of what it was like to have his room like that, what it was like to really put in the effort and have it destroyed. And at the same time, before, he'd had the pleasure of how great it was to feel like his room was like that. And that's how human interactions work. That's how relationships work. We're constantly running on pain pleasure. What we get rewarded for, we like to do again. What we get punished for, we don't like to do, especially if it hits one of our nerves. How right or wrong that is to manipulate that and actually condition people in the way you want them to be, I don't know. Thank you for your time today.
For questions, but I think we should make the most of the time we have.
Yeah.
Okay, so I assume that the scheme, what you've written on the board there, applies to people who are already in a committed relationship, right?
Right, but what I find is that the dynamics you set up from the first date you have with someone tend to apply throughout the relationship. When someone has a problem 5 years or 2 years into their relationship, it's not because of a problem that happened 5 years in, it's because of a dynamic that they set up way before that, that's only now maybe manifesting itself in this particular way. Most of the time when I find someone has an issue in their relationship, it didn't start there. You trace it right back to a moment where someone set up a set of conditions or rules. People in relationships, I find, they adhere to the parameters that you set them. And if they don't, then that's not a relationship for you. But of course, people tend to stay in relationships where the person continuously breaks through their parameters that they set.
Fair enough. So my question was just, I would assume that you would give a different advice to us when it comes to the dating phases. So because you could have a very similar situation at the dating stage. So you're out with your date and you go to the loo and you come back and your date is flirting with this guy.
Right.
She's laughing and... Well, how do you handle that?
Well,
what's your advice on this?
I think there's two things. Firstly, there's a moment where you decide this relationship just got more serious. And at that point, a new set of rules come into play, right? Because you have different rules for someone that you're just dating than you do for someone that you're with. But, of course, even then, my rules at that moment would be in conflict there, because that wouldn't be behaviour that I would want. It's different for different people, but if I was coming back from the toilet and my date was flirting with someone else, it would be something that I'd have to either talk about in that moment, or it would be something that I'd make a note of, because people's actions are usually a manifestation of their values. And if someone's action is that, it tells me a lot about what their values are. And therefore, it's almost an immediate disqualifier for someone that I'm on a date with. I'd probably be thankful that I saw it at that point rather than 2 months into a relationship.
It seemed like you were saying, you know, when you're talking about telling the flirting person that it's a turn-off.
Yeah.
You were saying that it's important that it's truthful. You are actually finding it a turn-off, you said.
Sure.
So it's true.
Sure.
But I feel as though the kind of operationalization of dating science, it's often putting a stress on sort of science of sort of manipulating other people's feelings and perceptions and behaviours. It doesn't put a strong stress on authenticity or kind of even honesty, if you like. Do you think, I mean, to push you on this kind of ethics of this stuff, do you think it's important that everything you do is authentic? Because, you know, there are a lot of people for whom the authentic behaviour is to be really shy, to be really ineffective, and they have to act in an inauthentic way in order to get any results that they want.
There's a couple of things there. One is assuming that if someone is shy, that's the authentic them. And I like to believe that people aren't born shy. You know, you don't watch babies walking around insecure in front of the mirror because their arse looks big. You know, they develop those insecurities. And it's true that some people are not insecure, they're just quiet, and that's fine. But this is about developing positive habits, as opposed to changing who you actually are. Most of us, the whole thing about changing who you are is bullshit anyway. You're never going to change who you are. You're stuck with you. You know, what changes is our habits. We have a ton of negative habits. A lot of women will say to me when I first try and get them to talk to someone, this just isn't who I am. What they're really saying is, I've been carrying around a habit for the last 20 years that is not talking to people. Not talking to people isn't who they are. So you have to separate true values from habits. The second point I was going to make was, remind me of what you were saying. You were saying, it's authentic.
I was just asking if you think that it's
authentic. Yes, right. And what I was going to say next is, I see it not about rules, but about principles. I think if you follow rules in your love life, you're in trouble. I.e., if you follow the rules that some book says to you, you read, he's just not that into you. You read the rules, you read the game. You know, you read some book that gives you a set of rules, that's where you run into problems. Because any time you have to deviate from those rules, you feel like you're off the map. Principles are what matter. There's a book called The Rules. I don't know, has anyone heard of it? Anyone seen it? Yeah, a lot of women have read it. It's a multi-million bestseller, and so much of it is complete nonsense. I mean, there's some good stuff in there, but there's some terrifying stuff in there as well. Two things that I'll tell you that it says in that book that I just couldn't believe when I saw them. One is, if a guy doesn't come up to you, don't bother going up to him because he's not interested. I know from coaching thousands of guys that the more attracted to you a guy is, the less likely it is that he's coming up to you. Right? The harder it is. If we see someone who we don't care about, we'll go up to her. Give us any elderly lady on the street, we can help her with the shopping bags. Give us the person that drives us crazy and it's really difficult. So that was complete nonsense as a rule. Then there was a great example of what you're talking about is there's a rule that's never accept a date for a Friday on a Wednesday. Right? Now, somebody tell me, if you know that, somebody tell me, what's the principle behind that? What are they trying to get at with that?
Play hard to get.
What does it communicate about you?
You're too available.
If you accept a date. Yeah, if you accept a date, you're too available. Whereas if you can't accept a date for a Friday on a Wednesday, what does it say about you?
Busy.
You're busy. You have a life. Now, the problem I have with that is rather than teaching you how to have a life, it teaches you a rule that shows you how to fake having a life. And so instead of actually going out and doing fun, cool stuff, on a Friday night, you're sitting at home watching TV when you could have been out with the person you actually liked. Rules don't work because we're all different. No one should follow one set rule. But principles do work. I.e., being someone who has a life is attractive. That doesn't mean you have to be busy every day. Busy doesn't equal having a life. But having a life that you're proud of and a life that you enjoy is the principle that's really there, the thing they're trying to get at. Same with a lot of women talk to me about, you know, if a guy doesn't call me, what can I do? You know, he doesn't like me. And I say, well, actually, that's not necessarily true. Sometimes a guy just lets 3 or 4 days pass. You know, and he doesn't manage to get round to it because of whatever reason. There's a way you can actually gauge how interested he is, and it's a very simple text that you can send. You know, if you're out, let's say you go out with your friends, and there's a guy there, and you want to see if he's actually interested, you can be out with your friends and be authentic by saying, hey, I'm out with my friends, we're in this really cool place, you should come, you love the music. Now, it's a statement, it's not a question. So if he never texts you back, you never asked anything. But at the same time, what you do is you text it late enough that probably he can't come. So you text it at like 9 or 10 o'clock when you know he probably won't be able to come anyway. Be prepared for the fact that he might come. Don't be sitting in the bath and he suddenly shows up to this place, right? But the reason that works is because what the guy will do is if he can't make it, he's likely to say what? Hey, can't make it.
college.
Are you around this weekend? What are you up to later on this weekend? Because if he likes you, he's going to counter suggest something. If he's got no interest, likelihood is he'll just leave it there. But it's a fantastic way of seeing if someone likes you and getting them to arrange a date with you without you ever putting yourself on the line. Now, the important part isn't that you send that specific text. The important part is that you understand the principle. Once you understand the principle, you can make up whatever rules you want.
Okay, we've probably got time for one more question.
Where are you from?
I'm from Italy.
Italy, okay. Absolutely. We have women fly from all over the world to do our courses, and it makes it very difficult because they all have a different set of... Not totally. In fact, the conditioning tends to be the same, but to varying degrees. So an English woman is not in the habit of approaching men, but she can be brought round to the idea. A Russian woman comes on one of our courses, and I've got a fight on my hands trying to convince her that she needs to be a little bit more proactive. Because often when I coach Russian women, they're so used to the idea that the man comes up to me. I sit there, the man comes up to me. That it's very difficult to change that conditioning. So usually, I think people are people, no matter where they are in the world. And one thing that I didn't talk about today is the truth is, whatever our behaviours are, we all have the same needs. We're all running on the same needs. We're all trying to be significant. We're all trying to feel important to someone. We all want to be understood. We all want to be validated. We all want to feel like we're actually getting somewhere in life. We all have the same needs. Men and women just meet them slightly differently. And then within that, individuals meet them differently. But from different countries, the conditioning doesn't tend to be that this woman thinks this is okay and this woman doesn't, although of course it does happen in religious cases and so on. What it usually is this woman is this objective to this behaviour and this woman is this against it. But it's kind of interesting and fun, you know. My girlfriend's from Argentina, so she is completely impossible in her own way as well. But yeah, that's what makes life interesting, right?
Okay, look, thank you very much for coming, Matthew. I mean, this has been absolutely fantastic, and I'm sorry we can't show the clip,
but there's only 1 minute.
I think the thing to do is to go to YouTube and put in the phrase, the differences between men and women. We've got a dinner organised, people have pre-booked, but if you want to come and you haven't pre-booked, I'm sure we can squeeze you in. It's at Al Shami restaurant in Jericho. We'll go over there in a few moments. But please join me now in thanking Matthew for a fantastic talk. And could you leave the glasses up here, thanks.